Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The main team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
El Thrasher.
God Emperor.
And it was just on the last episode that we had Magin on. So I thought, oh, let's continue the streak.
Yes, the Civ Rev players have to appear on Polycast to say that Civ 5 is not a sequel to Civ Rev.
Welcome to Polycast, episode 108. I am guest co-host El Thrasher. Here is God Emperor.
Hi.
Daniel Quick.
Season 4 has been a go.
Q&L.
Hi.
And Makalua.
You guys need more caffeine because obviously all of you are asleep. Except for Dan. He's always on. I don't know what that's about.
It's the maple syrup.
Ah, sugar rush. Gotcha.
And the caffeine IV.
No, that's mine.
Speaking of word association, I saw in the grocery store yesterday a Texas license plate in the parking lot. I thought, honestly, I saw the Texas license plate, and the first thing I thought of was Mackie.
That's awesome.
And I was like, man, I think I've seen a Texas license plate in person about 10 times, and the law of averages must mean that one of these people must be Mackie, because nobody lives in Texas. So I'm looking around.
It wasn't me either.
Oh, Carl, you live in Texas?
Yes.
Are you guys neighbors?
I don't think so.
It's possible, but not likely.
It's a big state.
Both of you go to your window and wave now. Do you see someone waving back? In Forum Talk, we discussed instant heal promotion issues in Civilization V.
In the research lab, we talked about someone's idea for a new version of barracks, wanting to get rid of all the workers. Also, someone had an idea for holy city-states to bring religion back to Civ 5. We also talked about a conditioned technological development, or basically other kinds of prerequisites for making all those neat techs.
And under the miscellaneous heading, the new Civilization board game. This one coming from Fantasy Flight Games.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
Marshall Thomas started a thread about instant heal promotion issues. He asked, do you think that Civ would be better off without the instant heal promotion? Do you think it adds to the problem of early runaway AI on AI conquering sprees? Well, you know, I know it tends to ruin to Mackie on AI conquering sprees. But is it realistic? What is it supposed to represent?
Maybe it's just you.
I have an argument in favor of it.
Go.
This is one of the few things that I've actually seen the AI do intelligently. Bombard a unit down to one hit point, and then it's like, oh my god, I'm going to die, and oh, I have this instant heal promotion, so I'll use it. I'm like, wow, that was the right thing to do. And it's kind of sad to take that away from the AI that doesn't do very much right.
It's true. I've had grief on me with their companion cavalry. I'm like, I've almost got it. Crap, he healed it. Damn it.
Isn't that kind of a reverse of the universal argument of how the AI doesn't do things very well, though?
You know, that's it. Yeah, we should keep that because it's one of the things the AI actually does understand to do.
Yeah. In that case, I would have to agree with that.
And maybe a variation that we could do is if something is severely injured, you could have it so that if it was, as opposed to instant heal, you could have it as compared to, say, you know, like fortify until healed, depending upon how injured it is, might take 4 or 5 turns. Maybe we could have it where it's just in that one moment, you could accelerate the healing. So rather than something, as someone says, rather than taking a promotion that might help the unit later on, once it's healed in further battles, etc., you could say, I'm going to get this accelerated heal. It cuts down that heal time, but you can only use it that once. That doesn't mean that from now on its heal time is increased. It's just in that particular moment, I'm going to have to commit to that. I can't move that unit the next turn. It's still healing. So do I still want that unit to be exposed because I think it has a better chance of surviving where it's put in place and healing rather than trying to move it out of the way to be healing a little slower but perhaps a little farther away from the action?
Well, that would probably make more sense to some of the realism people here who are like, you don't just magically get 6,000 more units.
Yeah, you might get the experience to know that now is when you need them.
Yes.
You've been holding them in reserve, and you can fail to use them and get wiped out, or you can use them when you need them, which is a function of experience and, well, general intelligence.
As much as I'm happy that I would be making some of the realism argument people happy here, when you get into that kind of thing, it's like, yeah, well, you know, people didn't build a certain wonder of the world and suddenly they got a free technology either.
I built the pyramids. Suddenly I know all these governments.
I built the Oracle. Hey, I have this idea about working metal.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps a little back to Civilization 4, but still the same. We see comparable things in Civilization 5, too.
Yeah.
Generic player, later on in the thread, said, I think the heal promotion issue would not be a problem if units did not receive experience for defending and only received it for attacking.
I can't really agree with that. Defenders learn things just as much as attackers do if they survive.
Now maybe you can take that and you could say you can use the instant heal promotion, but if you use the instant heal promotion, you know that experience you would have otherwise earned, you don't get it.
Well, I mean, if you use it, then you don't get another promotion. I try to avoid using them, because if I can get plus 60% on open terrain or whatever, that's really powerful, even attacking or defending. Or if you get the plus 25% city attack, or, like, get up to where you get to attack twice, or have an extra range, or have an extra movement, I mean, those are pretty huge.
You're more likely to survive now, but you're less likely to win later.
Right. Of course, you're entirely unlikely to win later if you die, but... You can maybe withdraw.
Unlikely.
Instead of taking heal promotion, why not run away, withdraw a tile onto the wooded hill?
That's what I normally do, but I don't have a problem with the instant heal.
There are times that when the heal is the best choice, there are times when there are other perfectly good options.
It's just the instant heal promotion when trying to push an attack, whether it's on a city or just trying to reduce force. I mean, admittedly, it's not like, oh, yay, I win a battle, I now have a promotion opportunity. But if I can keep pushing it, if I can keep using that instant heal promotion, it's more the instant gratification. The fact that I also know that I can upgrade these units later on with the instant heal promotion, and as we've talked about, upgrading units is typically cheaper in time and energy and effort than building that unit from the outset because of production issues. Keep those units around, and then rather than thinking about, okay, the experience or their advantage is going to be the promotions over other comparable units, I'll still have those units, and then I can upgrade them for that fraction of the price. So my thinking is actually not only about the instant heal promotion itself, but now I'm looking at the bigger picture, and with that instant heal promotion, I could take the option to pull it back and have it heal, but if it's like, okay, I could do that and have the longer advantage, but if I do the instant heal now, I'm probably going to be able to take that city next turn, or I'm going to be able to take that unit out, particularly when I'm dealing with the AI and they're so terrible at combat anyway. It's too tempting in the moment, because then my advantage later on is going to be that civ is without that city, without that army, or heck, maybe even swipe off the map completely. Dealing with humans, it can be a little different, but even then, the instant heal is very tempting. If I knew I could do the instant heal, but I couldn't move it for a turn or two, I might think differently, because then that means, yeah, I instant heal, but now I can't attack.
That's not a bad idea.
That sounds reasonable.
I haven't done multi yet, for a variety of reasons, but I would imagine that the instant heal would be even more powerful then, because those games are going to tend to be quicker and over faster, so trying to save up a bunch of promotions is probably less of a good strategy, because AI is not going to be like, I'm losing, I quit.
I'm more a multiplayer person, which, now admittedly, it's mostly cooperative multiplayer with humans against the artificial intelligence, but still, for exactly the reason that you just said there, the difference in experience and also knowing how the game itself is going to play out, and, you know, knowing how long games in Civilization V can take, it's like another thing I take into effect. Do I want this game to be over tonight? Don't need instant gratification, but timely gratification.
Oh,
come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Well, for my idea, for a new feature.
You have an idea for a new feature, Lisa, but we have a thread with something. you knew I was going to make that joke. Come on. That was too easy.
This thread is by Protator, and he says, okay, let's say that you have a unit that has no experience going to the city with a barracks. I think it should be possible to retrain that unit in that city so that it ends up with 3 experience points. It seems logical to me that the unit would use up all its movement points by doing this and could only do the training if it has all of its movement points, just like Healy. I think it should only take one turn to retrain a unit.
So you're sitting there at the beginning of the game, you're building those warriors with no barracks, you finally build your barracks, but you're stuck with a bunch of warriors that don't have any experience points. I think that would address the problem. You'd very rapidly retrain them all to have the experience points. Even if you're in the middle of a war, they're just sitting there in your cities anyway.
You're not doing anything else with them. It seems like an okay idea to me, as long as
there is a cap.
Yeah, you can't just get hundreds and hundreds of experience points.
Yeah, I was going to say, somehow in the code, tell you can only retrain once. Because otherwise, you could just sit there and infinitely retrain.
Presumably, the retraining would just take you up to the number that a barracks gives you when new.
Yeah.
Well, and what if that city that had the barracks and had a great general, too?
Oh, they had a settled general.
I don't know. It could go either way, I suppose.
I feel like if you did this, you would never really need to build barracks in any city until you, decided to go to war and you really needed that experience. Or maybe you got declared on.
Yeah, then you build your barracks, and a turn later, bang, all your units have the experience.
Well, then you would have to have it so that the time that would take your units to get back to the city with the barracks in order to retrain, and then the time to move back out.
I guess I assumed that it was one unit per barracks per turn that could get the XP, as opposed to I move my stack of 200 units into the city and they all train.
There's another cap, yeah.
Sounds like it's heavily determined by whether survives one unit per tile restriction is in effect. Because if it's not, then the potential for abuse is much higher.
Or even in Civilization 4, you could have this, so long as it was one unit per turn, and they can only get that upgrade once. Not only in that city, but it's not like, oh, well, it went to this city's barracks, so maybe it could go to another city's barracks next turn.
Learn those secret fighting techniques.
I'm reading between the lines here, Predator.
I think you hit a point of diminishing returns if you your warrior's running around between 7 different cities that have barracks and you're not doing anything else with them. Just training them up. You're like, all right, now they're all trained, and, oh, what's that, a tank? Oops.
Yeah, but, you know, you could have the tank versus your spearman with 187 experience points.
We could also toy around with have it scalable to ages or the type of unit or just as a basis. I mean, one of the other things he says is it should take one turn to retrain the unit.
Yeah.
I could also play with that.
I don't see any problem with this idea as long as it can only be taken up to 3 experience points or possibly the number of experience points that a unit would get in that city if there's settled great generals, especially if it was limited to, you know, one unit per turn per barracks. I don't see how that would be unbalancing.
So you're not bringing in your already experienced units to get even more experience.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just if you've got less than 3, you can get 3 experience points.
And maybe a little more if you got the settled great general. Okay, then there's an incentive to settle a great general. Another incentive to settle a great general.
If you get the great general points added in, well, there's the whole issue of settle, you know, 7 great generals in one city in conjunction with the barracks gives you 17 experience points.
Part of the crappy part about this is before the aggressive trait is so crappy already, and if you did this, the number of barracks you would build would decrease dramatically. So the effect of halving the number of hammers to get to barracks would just, I don't know, be even weaker.
I don't think it would decrease the number of barracks that I would build. It would delay some of them. Don't need them so soon, the units to get the experience. But you know, I don't want to be shuttling all of my units back to some city or two just to send them back where they came from as the new city defenders. Who's defending the city while they're gone? And things of that nature. I suppose you could shuffle them through. One from city A comes in, the one that was there goes out to that city to replace it. But that's just too much work.
And having multiple great generals settled, I mean, first off, you're going to have to do a fair bit of fighting and be successful with it in order to have those seven great generals. But if you have a city with a great general and you build a unit in it, but it doesn't have a barracks, it is going to have experience.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's not going to be one of these units that has no experience. So it would have to be a unit that you're building in another city, and you're taking the effort to move over there, after which you've had to get multiple great generals. So
yeah,
sure, maybe you might still have a wandering warrior, but the time you would have that many great generals in a city to order to have that combination, you could give the warriors the promotions up the wazoo, but that's all based on their base strength, right? There's only so much that you can do.
Yeah.
So by the time you got into that point in the game, what else was around? Its uniqueness would have been like, gee, this would have been nice to have 500 years ago or 100 turns ago.
It does make those initial units that are built before barracks a little bit more useful later and a little bit more worth upgrading, too, the cost of that. I really hate upgrading units that have no experience points. It's the, you know, I could build a better unit. Why would I pay the money to upgrade it? Units that would be worse than one that you would build to replace it.
Yeah, I don't think I would make a ton of use. I don't see anything wrong with it. It could be nice to have. My strategy is pretty much always favored more units over better units. Quantity over quality.
For the most part, it would just help with the units that you built in a city before it had a barracks, which, I don't know, in my case, is usually not too many. Most of my military units get built in cities with barracks once I can build the things. Once you've got the barracks, all your units are going to have the experience points anyway, so it won't do anything for you.
That makes me actually, even though this was more Civ 4, just to tie into Civilization 5. Let me see, how many times have I built a barracks in Civilization 5?
I have once.
Oh, never!
Yeah, exactly.
So combined with the fact that I, too, even in Civilization 5, would prefer the advantage of more units over more heavily promoted units. It's not quite as easy in Civilization 5 with the one unit per tile issue, but when we're talking about building a city with barracks, if we were to take this now to Civilization 5, would this now get me to decide to build a barracks? And the answer is no. Let's get rid of workers, which we know that in the Civilization series, they have been gotten rid of, sort of, both in Civilization Revolution as well as in Cult of Power. Now, Civilization Revolution does not come up in this thread, but Cult of Power does. CGG 1066 says, here's my suggestion. By working a tile, the relevant improvement, so farms on plains, grassland, lumber mill on forest, etc., would be built automatically after a set number of turns. No worker needed. You get the improvement built where you need it. No micromanagement. No AI workers doing things and going places you don't want. There was a similar thread that was linked to that was started a couple of weeks before. I just talked about, I don't think you ever need workers on the map to move them around for improving to getting resources. You can just make it more comfortable just right-clicking on a tile to improve so no overlapping with troops. Now, the thing about no micromanagement, I think there's still going to be
a lot.
Some micromanagement required. First off, that the relevant improvement would be built. Lumber mill on forests.
What if it's before you can build a lumber mill?
Well, that too.
What if you want to chop down the forest and build a farm? It needs a pop-up menu that you pick what you want anyway. It's just as much management.
And what happens when the barbarians start stacking all of your improvements?
And what if I don't want a farm on the plain grassland? What if I want a trading post?
Yeah.
He's kind of going in from the general idea to some of the specifics, and I'm hitting on some of these specifics right now. But some people brought in, as I said, a Call to Power public work system, and I think, Matt, you can speak better to CivRev, and I don't, if any of us here really played much of Call to Power, I did not.
Well, enough that I know how that worked. It was like you put a little bit of your economy into the pool of public works, and you bought them by public works points, basically.
And you were able to choose what that improvement was going to be.
Yes.
So both the tile as well as how that tile would be improved based on what you could build?
Yes.
On the micromanagement side, that's not any less. You still have to pick what you want where, and do you have the funds to do it now? I don't see how that's any less micromanagement, except for having to occasionally move the worker someplace.
I think
occasionally cuss the worker out for getting caught.
Yeah, it removes that whole strategic option of stealing workers.
I I think that Barry just has a big problem with building workers and putting them in the build queue and stuff like that. And about the trading posts in the post, he says that he wants to lose them because they're ugly. And the next iteration of Civ should have a much more sophisticated and intuitive economy anyway, which, okay, I can see that.
Okay, program your own Civ game.
Yeah, I've seen that argument too. Get rid of trading posts because they look ugly. Okay, well, like, seriously?
How about change the graphics because they look ugly?
Yeah, that's called a mod.
Exactly.
Trading posts just look like money to me, so I'm okay with them. If I look at the screen and I see a whole bunch of trading posts, that means that I'm rich.
Ka-ching!
You just see dollar signs.
Oh.
Oh, you should get your eyes checked out, Matt. They don't look anything like dollar signs. I don't know what's going on.
Maybe you should get your eyes checked.
There you go.
Maybe we should both get our eyes checked. What do you think of that?
That's a great idea.
Well, I agreed first, so.
Right.
He's not even getting rid of workers completely, so you would still have to build them, which, it's like, what's the point? Why not have workers anyway?
Still use workers to build roads? Yeah, I mean, that's kind of weird. You might as well keep them if you're going to, I mean, I don't know. In CivRev, there are no workers. If you want a road, you just pay for it and it's there.
And the road is directly from one city to another.
Right. Yeah, you don't have any choice. It just goes the quickest path to the next city. And if there's no path, then you can't build it. There are no real tile improvements. There are buildings that you can build that make a tile better, kind of like the mint in Civ 5, which will make your precious metal producing tiles better, plus 3 gold or something like that. Same idea. In Civ 5, I find workers a little weird, because by the end of the game, I usually have captured so many, and I do delete some of them if I don't need them, but it seems like only a limiting factor in the beginning of the game, when maybe I can steal one, maybe I have to make one myself, maybe barbarians will come and take it or something like that, but once I'm past that phase, then really I have workers coming out of my ears and can get anything I want right away. So that doesn't seem probably exactly what was intended.
My biggest issue with workers in Civilization 5 is they don't stack. So rather than having a couple of workers on a particular hex, and of course not only are they combined, so I'm having to move less workers, they can actually complete things more quickly, but having to go, okay, say I've got 10 workers, I would often pair 2 workers together, and so if all of them have to move to go do something, now I have to do that 10 times as opposed to 5.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to stick to not only the 1 unit per hex, but we're not going to give an exception to, say, these particular non-combat units, then the trade-off then becomes if we put it into the city screen, like the person here talks about, yeah, beneath city allocation, have place works, Shatter God. So this would be within the city screen itself. So now it's, yeah, there's still micromanagement. We're just deferring that from the screen as far as units to move around and putting it within the city screen. I do think you lose some micromanagement slightly because of not having to actually move the workers themselves, that you could say, okay, this is within my cultural borders, build this particular improvement here. 1 or 2 clicks as opposed to 2 or 3 in terms of moving a worker. I would actually like this, or allow me to stack my workers. That I think I can get around my feel for needing of not having workers, that I can manage, okay, in terms of the time to complete my turn, yeah, I want to be able to think what it is I'm doing, but it's like, okay, you go here, and you go here, and you go there, or actually be able to tell them, okay, I want you to go here first and build this improvement, and go here and then build that improvement. So then if I can't stack my workers, at least I'm only going to say have to move them maybe half the time.
I think the whole idea of workers is a little odd, because workers will improve a tile, like make a grassland into a farm, but then to get food off that farm, I need to put a citizen there, and a worker's not a citizen. He doesn't live anywhere. I guess he's a slave, and he just wanders around building things that I tell him to build. It has nothing to do with the overall population of my empire. Like, I could have 20 workers in a single one-population city, or I could have 30 population cities and 1 worker.
At some point, they cost money if you have too many.
It's true. They do cost maintenance. That one city probably can't support 20 workers. But it just seems a little weird. Some of the things that you do with a worker, and some of the things that come from the city, but it's all, from my mind, it would be work. Like, building a farm is work, and working a farm is, I think, by definition, work. It's a little, I think, unintuitive at first, but something that Civ players have gotten used to.
I kind of like them, but getting rid of them would solve the problem that I always have, that if there's a barbarian or enemy in my territory, my workers will find them and move right next to them.
Don't automate them.
I don't, but the pathfinding when moving from point A to point B,
the pathfinding.
If it's possible to move next to an enemy unit,
yes,
they will. I lose, I think, at least two workers every game that way, just because they're supposed to stop when they see the enemy, but they never do. They always move right next to them and then end their turn.
Well, at least in Civilization V, you have the potential to get them back.
Yeah, in Civ 4, the AI always just kills workers.
And for them, too. Heaven forbid they try to use it to their advantage.
Yeah. On the other hand, the whole micromanagement issue... A lot of people like the micromanagement. It's why they play Civilization instead of some more streamlined game. You can control things in pretty detail, and the managing is what they like. To some extent, that's true for me. I like controlling all of these things. Then we get to the whole possible me and team argument. He really hates working unimproved tiles. And based on the original proposition where you the tile for a while and it develops the improvement, I suspect you'd hate that. You'd have to work unimproved tiles.
You would hate that, but maybe not if that's the way that I was working. This is from Craig123, Idea for Religion, Holy City States. Basically, a way to put religion back into the game, not really like it was in Civ 4, but was totally left out of Civ 5. The idea is that there would be a new variety of city-state, which are holy city-states, such as Jerusalem, the Vatican, etc., and they found religions, probably, I assume that they would each represent a religion, and if you ally with them, then that becomes your state religion.
Instead of like a military city-state would gift you a combat unit, then a holy city-state would gift you a missionary.
It could either be a whole new type of city-state, or it could be just a new characteristic that the existing types could have. They could develop a religion and still either be, you know, military or whatever.
Yeah, of course, you'd have to have a missionary mean something, and having a state religion means something.
The post that's linked to from the opening post that Colonel Mustard, the past guest host on Polycast, kind of tried to summarize all of these things, and he summarized it in a particular detail where we're talking about significant number of changes to gameplay.
Yes.
The Holy Cities start in 4000 BC. There are no new buildings that you have to construct. The city-states build in your cities based on diplomacy points. There are great religious leaders. There's one religious wonder per a holy city-state. There are inquisitions with a high place of worship, removal of religions through social policies, oft request from Civilization IV, allow for annexing of a holy city state, allowing the release of a holy city state after capture. Then it starts to actually go into religious quests, which of course gets us into the random events thing, and I think let's just slow down, let's leave that part off to me. Let's worry about the religion part. I like the idea of having a fourth type of city-state rather than trying to tie it to one of the existing three, simply because then it keeps it with, okay, I've already got cultured and maritime and militaristic, and now you've got another one that's religious. I think the only issue would be then that you don't end up with more city-states. Since you have a fourth type, that just means you're going to have maybe a few less of the other three in order to be able to include religion for the holy states. I like the idea that it's using the city-state mechanic already. You kind of use that as a template. Like I already mentioned, what could be the benefit of allying with them? What benefit are they giving you? One of the things is they would be giving you missionaries. And then, yes, then it comes into, well, what is that missionary going to allow you to do? A number of things have been suggested. You've allied with the holy city-state. Because it's religion, you don't necessarily have to get into anything like it. I mean, adopting a religion, kind of an abstracted, non-tangible happiness resource that if you ally with the city-state, then you're getting a happiness boost. And if you want to continue to have that happy, then you're going to have to continue to placate those city-states and remain allied with them. So maybe we don't even need the missionary thing at all that they got into.
I mean, to me, it makes sense for this to be tied with the piety social policy. It doesn't completely make sense for a leader to be pious or to have a pious social policy without having any religion. Then what are you being pious about?
You've got the happiness and the faith in without the religious aspect to it.
You're spiritual, but not religious?
Yes. That's kind of what you are right now. And then, okay, you can go down the piety line, and you're spiritual, but not religious. But if you're spiritual and religious, getting some additional benefits as well.
The missionaries could be tied into the piety line somehow. Periodically, the city-state sends you a missionary that you do something with, and what you can do with it depends on what your piety is, mm-hmm. how far you've progressed, innumerable possible mechanics.
So I wonder if people would like to see that evolve into a Civ 4 kind of situation where you'll be more friendly with another civilization that has the same religion, but more likely to go to war with one that has a different religion. That was a really major aspect of Civ 4.
There's been suggestions in the threads that the holy city-state there could request that you go on a crusade against another religion, which would, of course, bring in conflict between religions. But aside from that, a lot of people seem to be against the whole significant impact on diplomacy.
Well, it's because the penalties and the bonuses were just so abusive and so boring.
Yeah, so I mean, the penalty for having all of this happiness is keeping yourself allied with the city-state, and if people are perhaps annoyed that you are getting that benefit from that city-state, then maybe they themselves dare try to go and take it for themselves. But then if you're allied with them, particularly if it's the AI, of course, then if they're already allied with them, they decide, we got to get rid of this holy city-state because this other empire is getting too much happiness benefit from it, then they have to take on the entire civilization. So in that way, it quote-unquote is your state religion, but you don't actually get the direct kind of like, oh, we're going to go to war with you because you have allied yourself with a different religion. They don't even look at the religion aspect of it so much as it's the happiness factor that you're getting from it.
Or whatever benefits, if you start getting too many, yeah.
Or they want it for themselves, yeah.
I'm not even sure what the title means, Conditioned Technological Development.
Well, let's just say that when we talk about research lab topics, there are some things that it's like, well, this is going to work, and you can incorporate this with minimal to no change to other game mechanics. Then there are other ones that it's, well, you can use it within the existing system, but it's going to require some minor changes. This one is overhaul.
So the idea was stated in one sentence. Techs can be researched only if the Civ meets conditions for them. By V. Soma. If I see a horse first, then I can learn horseback riding. I have a hill, I can learn to mine it. But how could I learn sailing if I don't have a coastal city? So each technology would have conditions that you need to meet, generally referred to as prerequisites.
We're flipping things around, right? Because now, if I want to know, for instance, if I have horse, I need to go animal husbandry. But now it's kind of like you can go animal husbandry only if you know you have horse.
Well, I think it's you learn animal husbandry, which teaches you about animals so you can see the horses. But if you don't have any horses, how could you research horseback riding?
Or maybe if you don't have any horses, why would you research horseback riding?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, why? Well, actually, it's the planning ahead. You start learning the tech as you send your settler out to settle the city over by the horses.
That's true. You do. I mean, the thing is that, for example, mining opens up a whole very important part of the tree. And if for some reason you didn't have any hills, which I don't think is very likely, maybe on some weird map.
Yeah.
I guess that part of the tree would just be closed off to you forever.
Well, until you settle a city over by a hill, presumably.
What if you're doing a one-city challenge?
Well, sooner or later, hopefully your borders would expand enough to get a hill. It would take a huge expanse of flat terrain to avoid hills and peaks and such.
Here's something less stupid, because I had a game in which I researched steel without ever having found any iron, because I needed to do that in order to get up to gunpowder. With this change, I wouldn't be able to do that, I guess.
They would have to make it so that steel was not a prerequisite for gunpowder.
That's possible, I guess.
Because, I mean, what he's proposing here is he's saying we're going to have to reorganize the entire tech tree.
Add conditions other than other techs.
Yeah.
Yeah, since prerequisite techs not listed are signed as C, they are a minimum that must be met. But then he's also got listed SC for speeding conditions. For instance, if I want to go to pottery, it says have a plains, grassland tile, so I need that at bare minimum. But then if I have a city by a river and have a floodplain tile, so I guess I then have to have both, then I can research pottery X percentage faster. I think that's what he's getting at.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it looks that way.
He said, now, it could be that both C and SC are in the game, but then he says, or only C or only SC. Well, no, if you're saying that a C is a minimum that must be met, then you'd have to have the C.
Well, it could be that SC is a required condition, that they're ORs, but the one that has an S in front of it makes you go faster than the other one.
Well, part of what's throwing me off, actually, is in some cases I can see the progression as that C actually is a minimum and SC is a build on that.
Yeah.
A good one was mining, right? To have a hill tile and then have a luxury mineral resource. Okay.
Yeah.
But then if I look at archery, condition, have killed a unit. Seating condition, have an archer by an ancient ruin upgrade or from city-state. So that could be an either-or. I don't have to have killed a unit then in order for that speeding condition to be true.
I think this could make an okay mod or maybe an option or something like that. I could see this really confounding some players.
That's the why can't I learn this tech thing if it's not clearly spelled out.
Well, I mean, hopefully there'd be tooltips that would tell you, you can't learn this because of this. But if you can't get whatever it is, if you just don't have iron. Because I've had a fair number of games where I just couldn't get iron or just can't get coal, which is already pretty tough to deal with. I don't know if there's probably something in here about coal.
This is all chicken and egg, right? With Civilization 4, you don't get to know where everything is on the map as far as resources go. You don't know that iron is there until you actually research ironworking. But now it would be you would have to find iron on the map before you could then research ironworking. And so now it's kind of the trade-off. Well, you know that that's where iron is, so you're probably going to want to settle that. And then once you settle that, you can research ironworking.
Yeah, you'd have to make sure that all of the revealed technologies for resources are at least one tech ahead of the used technology.
Yes.
Yeah, like in this case, you could have the irons revealed by mining.
Yeah, or bronze working, even, since that's also in line in Civ 4.
Some of these, like, kill the unit requirements wouldn't be possible if somebody likes to play with barbarians off, for example.
Well, you can kill the AI units.
Yeah, but would you really want to go to war before you have bronze working? Usually, unless you have, like, a nice, unique unit.
Yes, all the time.
Okay, well.
Or archery.
I'm not opposed to this suggestion.
Yeah, it depends on how well it's implemented. It could be complicated and hard to manage, or it could just flow fairly well.
It sounds to me like a good mod. Somebody should mod it. I don't think that they would make this the standard game.
Gee, I don't know. Civilization 5 introduced hexes after all those years of squares.
Don't remind me. No, I like them.
Depriving you of two adjacent aisles.
Just being nonsense. The board game. I think that's kind of exciting.
As someone pointed out in the thread, someone needs to brush up on their gaming history, because this is coming full circle, right?
It is.
It was a board game, it was a computer game, and now it's a board game again, and actually it's a board game again, because before this version, Fantasy Flight Games, the most previous board game was just after Civilization 3 was released by Eagle Games, which I actually do own, but I've never actually played it because I don't have anybody in real life that ever was wanting to try it. So other than the fact that I opened, the shrink wrap is off, like the units are still factory tied together. I kid you not. So that was a great investment. But this new version, I don't know. It's someone's like, oh, what better way than to spend time, you know, with friends than playing this game? Well, not that I don't have friends, but
presuming you could find some in real life that would actually want to play this with you is the tricky part.
The thing is, I have friends, but I think if I tried to get them to play this, then they wouldn't be my friends anymore. This kind of thing does not interest them. And the people that are interested in doing this, it's kind of difficult to have a F2F or face-to-face meeting for it.
Yeah.
You know what? Even though it's completely not constructive, all my favorite quote from this thread is from Meteor Punch. How are the loading times?
Actually, considering how many pieces it looks like it has, it could be considerable as you try to hunt them all down. We appear to be missing some pieces. Where did they go? Check under the couch.
Well, I do a little board gaming now and then. I'll probably get this. I've played other Fantasy Flight games, and they tend to do a pretty good job, although their business model is that they'll release the base game, and then they'll release expansions to try to get you to keep paying for the same game. So, like, the first comment here is 4-player limit bites. The Eagle Games board game allowed 6 players. I bet that there'll be an expansion that will allow this to be for 6 or 8 players.
There's a thread linked to from here on BoardGameGeek where someone wrote a review on it. It goes through impressions, rules, civilizations in the map, gameplay, and other rules, and things you might do wrong first time playing. I don't know, like some of the argument was, yeah, that you don't have as many players. Then a big plan I know about the Eagle Games is not only how long it took to set up, but how long to actually get a game to be finished. Not that the issue's ever come up in a Civilization game before. So perhaps they put it back into a board game format. Eagle Games did just a little too perfectly because they kind of took the good things with the not necessarily so good things. And yes, I know there are people out there that love their marathon games, including in Civilization V. Well, more power to you then, but not for multiplayer. I guess you find some people interested in doing a marathon game in multiplayer. Wow, okay. But anyway, if anybody who's listening to the show, let us know what they think of it. I'm tempted to buy it myself, if only for no other reason than I'm a crazy completist.
If you're going to play it, it looks like you need a really big table. There's the board, and there's a whole sideboard thing that has stuff on it, and then there's all these cards and stuff that each player has.
Big family gathering. So, can we have the dinner at your house? No. You got a dining room table. Yeah, but Civilization is set up on it. Hello. Oh, darn, you're right. That's no good.
Yep, sorry. Have to be at your house this year.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycasts in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Yes, the intent is for us to be back in 2011 for Season 5. We have been renewed.
Yay!
Yeah, Dan renewed us.
Congratulations on the season, guys.
We are awesome.
This has been Episode 108. I am God Emperor. Also here is QNL.
Goodbye.
Makalua.
It's food time now. Bye.
L. Thrasher.
Yeah.
And the inevitable Daniel Quick.
The only thing inevitable about Dan is his bad puns.
Another year with Polycast is better than a year without Polycast. Who would have thought that the show would still be going and that we'd be looking at a season 5? And yes, I renewed us, but it wasn't just, of course, my decision. It was also the decision along with my fellow regular co-hosts. And it's not just because we like to hear ourselves talk, but we were...
Are you sure?
Season 5 Polycast is also happening because of our growing and dedicated listener base out there, so keep on civin'! To you, Matt, would you like to do the introduction to the show?
Do you have a script somewhere?
It's really, really short.
Yes, it starts off with, "This is Polycast, Dan is totally awesome."
No.
I can try that. "This is Polycast, Dan is, I'm forgetting now. What's the next part?
Dan is forgettable, there you go.
Oh.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
I'll jump to Civ 5 for a minute because people are talking about the instant... Hi, Stuart.
Excuse me. That was a little indigestion about the instant heel promotion. Pardon me.
Oh, so now we know what Dan thinks about instant heel promotions. We also talked about a condition technological development, or basically other kinds of prerequisites for making all those neat techs.
All kinds of what needed for those other techs?
Prerequisites? Requisites? I can't.
Close enough.
All right, soapbox down and away.
Yeah, off the soapbox, Dan.
Did you leave off the "or else" at the end of that?
Yes, I did, actually.
Actually, I was referring to Dan. Keep on seven.
Oh.
Or else.
Oh, okay. Well.
But I suppose it's just as applicable.
Yes.
If not more so.
Mm-hmm. Record dates?
November 20th, 2010.
Civilization IV, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take Two Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.